This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Questions come to us via radioprogram@AOL.com. And I want to just remind people that we have a new way of fulfilling supplement orders. It's via FullScript. We're very excited because it offers you a vast selection of supplements, way more extensive than what we're able to offer in our modest inventory of products.
The store in the cloud.
The store in the cloud, yeah. And it's got also, by condition, the products that I recommend. So check it out. Go to drhoffman.com and click on the store. And there's a drop-down menu there that offers you the opportunity to register for FullScript, which entitles you to shop there for your supplement needs. And thereby, you also help to support our efforts to bring you free information. Okay.
Yes.
Enough said. Let's take some more questions.
Okay. We've got an email from Lauren. Lauren has trigeminal neuralgia. And Lauren's question is, what is the progression of TN? I'm a 67-year-old male, and I'm kind of wondering, what is the long-range effect of this? I've had three crisis episodes since January, and each has resulted in a 2 to 3 day hospital stay. Is this my new normal?
Well, it's hard to say because it's a pain syndrome that is sometimes difficult to treat. However, there's some people who have complete remission of pain from trigeminal neuralgia, so there's hope. Among the things that are helpful, B12 injections can be helpful. Mm. Acupuncture is sometimes helpful, but not always. Mm. And so, you know, those are some of the things that can make a difference. There's some people who do various types of blocks, nerve blocks. Pain specialists can do that. But it can be a devastating condition.
I think one case occurs to me of a woman that I know who had it, and her chiropractor was able to help her using, I don't remember the name of the technique or anything like that, but Lauren, ask your chiropractor, find a chiropractor, research what that might be, and that might be helpful.
And I've heard benefits of that, maybe some craniosacral technique, you know, that sometimes realigns the nerves in some way, and, you know, this is more chiropractic theory of how nerves can be irritated, nerve roots that correspond to places in the neck or the spine can correspond to pain syndromes. It's worth a shot.
Yeah. Wow. Otherwise, it's what kind of medications are typically? Gabapentin?
Those types of medications.
Okay.
Amitriptyline, gabapentin, and, you know, perhaps high-dose steroids when the attacks occur.
Wow. All right.
Because the normal, like, you know, Tylenol or Advil doesn't work. And then, of course, unfortunately, opiates, you know, to really knock people out. You know.
Right. There's no real nutritional cure this one, unless they were low in B12.
I'm thinking the B12 is helpful for nerve pain. Mm-hmm. So sometimes B12 shots can be, you know, at high doses.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Lauren, best of luck to you. We hope you find some relief. Find out what a chiropractor may be able to do for you. Okay. We've got an email from Florence. I'm female, 82 years old.
See, I kind of knew that because that name.
Florence?
Yeah. I know a Florence who's 98.
My
family.
Many of these names are coming back, actually.
Molly.
Molly, right. I'm female, 82 years old. I've seen 3 different gastroenterologists. There is still no answer to my discomfort. I have cramping and discomfort in my lower abdominal region mm-hmm. after I eat anything. Yeah. But 2.5 years ago, I was diagnosed with H. pylori. Pylori.
Yeah. Let me just dispel that because I think there's very little relationship between the presence of H. pylori, which is an upper GI issue, and a lower GI problem. Mm-hmm. In fact, there is probably an inverse relationship because eradicating H. pylori has been associated with a higher risk of IBS, irritable bowel syndrome.
GERD.
And GERD, too. Oof. And GERD, yeah. And I recently read an article that shows that people who have had their H. pylori eradicated have a higher risk of overweight. And that's possibly because simply there's an association between antibiotic use and weight gain. So, you know.
That's how the animals get fattened up for the slaughter.
They feed them, you know, cradle to grave antibiotics. Right. So let's pursue this as a lower GI problem. And how would we look at this? I mean, I think gastroenterologists tend to look at these problems as, rule out colitis, rule out cancer.
Those have been ruled out.
And then, you know, take some psyllium, take a fiber product. Mm-hmm. And or their latest tool for IBS is to give patients Xifaxan, which is an antibiotic that's sometimes used to treat that. Or some of them are attuned to the FODMAP diet now. They've gone to GI conferences. They've heard about the FODMAP diet, which has only been around for about, 10 years or so. Mm-hmm. And it was developed at Monash University in,
Australia.
Mm-hmm. So she doesn't talk to us at all about diet.
She has a loss of appetite and hair loss.
Well,
the hair loss could be from the loss of appetite.
Yeah, that she's undernourished or that she's malabsorbing.
Probably.
I would really want to take a diet history. I would want to try an elimination diet. I hope that celiac disease has been ruled out. It's unlikely that you go till 82 without a diagnosis of it, but it's possible.
It is possible. Yeah. We've had 70-year-olds diagnosed with celiac disease.
Yeah. And, But only the most complacent gastroenterologists these days, I think, would not test a person for celiac disease. I'm surprised sometimes when I see the workups that people have when they come in here. That they didn't get properly tested for celiac.
Right. Not enough attention is being paid to that. Okay. Florence, thank you very much. We hope you find some comfort soon.
This is a good point at which to allow one of our sponsors to identify themselves and share this message with you.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally, and it's so effective it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 888-408-6141. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, you can get $50 off and free shipping. Just use the coupon code Hoffman at checkout. At tryzona.com.
Okay, thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make this broadcast possible. Let's return to questions.
Okay, we've got an email from Rick. Dr. Hoffman, recently I had some annual blood work, and I asked my MD to also run the MTHFR test so I could see what the result might be. I am positive for two copies of the C677T variant. Well, the PA that I asked about this test had really no knowledge about it and no real advice for me at all. And I know this relates to methylated B vitamins. My homocysteine is an 8.6. Is there anything else I need to pay attention to?
Yeah. So this is something that is a trendy concept in nutrition. We've done some podcasts on MTHFR, and it is just one of the genes that may influence the need for additional nutritional support. And what's interesting is that this pertains to methylation, which is an issue related to homocysteine. But in many patients with MTHFR variants, homocysteine is normal.
Yeah.
So there may be other compensatory SNPs or genetic sites that compensate for this weak pathway. So generally 677 heterozygotes, which means two hits, not just one hit. Because one hit, I've got one hit. I don't think it's a biggie. But they may be more prone to a wide variety of problems. They may be more prone to blood clots. They may be prone to
coronary artery disease.
Coronary artery disease, allergies. They are at risk of having kids potentially with developmental disorders if their mate has a corresponding genetic contribution that together they will get a double hit, but it's not invariable, you know, that you'll have this. So we may see a higher risk of certain psychiatric or mental disorders, developmental disorders. But, you know, it's complex and unclear, and there's some people who are fine with a double 677. It would be advisable for them to take a product like Methylguard, which gives you methyl support with B6 and B12 and folate. And I think it might have some riboflavin and some trimethylglycine in it as well.
Right.
These are all things that help methylation. And methylation is a theme now in terms of optimal brain function and efficiency of metabolic pathways. You know, without going into enormous detail, it's interesting that, you know, there's not a lot of awareness of this in conventional medicine.
Yeah, not yet. Well, not yet. And then that the other SNPs that you make mention of earlier also have to be considered in what is actually happening with the MTHFR pathway and how it's dealt with as well.
And there are some people who take those B vitamins and they feel all bent out of shape because of another variation called COMT, which can cause people to get too hyper from B vitamins. So it's complex.
It is complex.
And it's a field that is in its infancy.
Yeah.
And there are some, I think, doctors who take it to an extreme.
Yeah, I agree.
And interpret this as if it were
the end-all and be-all.
The end-all and be-all with very, very complex manipulations of supplements. And we interviewed a guest recently who was talking about the MTHFR lifestyle, which has actually been shown that diet, exercise, adequate rest, avoidance of pollutants, environmental toxins, help methylation. Support methylation. So it's not just about, you know, taking mega doses of folate.
Time to move out of New York City?
Yeah. That could be part of a methylation lifestyle.
Right.
I'm working on it because I spend weekends out in the country.
There you go. Yeah. That will eventually be my plan. Okay.
Right.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So, Rick, thank you very much for your question.
Yeah.
Okay. We have a question from Bo. Bo writes, Bo, B-E-A-U, male.
Okay.
I've had unexplained weight gain, bloating, and pale loose stools for years. And I've had just about every test with no positive results. I eat healthy and run about 30 miles a week. I had a liver biopsy, and I was told that I have fatty liver. I have fatty liver without inflammation or scar tissue.
Wow.
And this is very common in people who are not obese, based on how they potentially metabolize their cholesterol. So I was told that the treatment is to stay active, no fried food, no simple sugars, no alcohol, to control the cholesterol. And Lipitor was also suggested.
No.
Does this treatment approach make sense?
No. It doesn't. It doesn't at all make sense because Lipitor is hepatotoxic. That doesn't make sense. And also, you know, it's not about avoidance of fat. It's about avoidance of carbs. And, you know, the clue is this guy's a big time runner and many runners like carbo-load. And probably take a lot of fructose based formulas and juices. And that's precisely what gives you fatty liver. Now, what's interesting is that he has pale loose stool and that suggests some sort of fat malabsorption issue or like, you know, some impairment of bile ducts. But it could be because of his liver abnormality. That's you know, when the liver is on the fritz,
Detoxing well, so it's not producing enough bile.
It's not producing bile.
So, to help detox.
To emulsify the... So it's... So things that help. I mean, I recently did a podcast on that subject with Dr. Robert Roundtree. You look it up because it was a few weeks ago. We talked about the entire podcast about fatty liver. So that's a gem for this guy. He should really look at that or listen to that podcast. But among the things we've discussed, things that are helpful, vitamin E at fairly high doses, 800 international units of mixed tocopherol vitamin E, milk thistle, alpha-lipoic acid, N-acetylcysteine, phosphatidylcholine.
Yeah.
And, of course, trimethylglycine, TMG. These are all helpful for fatty liver. Can you think of any others that might be helpful? Some evidence.
Did you mention milk thistle?
Yeah, milk thistle. Silymarin, milk thistle.
I know there are certain things in like the Core Restore detox program, like clover, maybe Shisandra may be helpful as well. But I think you've covered the main ones.
Yeah.
And yes, get off the fried food, no simple sugars, alcohol, fructose, all of those. You have to eat a much more detox-oriented diet.
And coffee.
And coffee. Oh, coffee is good.
Yeah, coffee is good.
Coffee helps to detox the liver. Right.
And protects the liver from damage in fatty liver.
Yes. Okay. Bo, best of luck to you. Don't carbo load anymore. That's probably the reason.
Yeah. I mean, the clue is that as a runner, 30 miles a week is a high volume runner, in my opinion. That could be a problem.
Okay.
And by the way, what it suggests is that you can't run away from liver disease.
No.
Is that it's not really about so much about exercise, although being sedentary would be worse.
Yes.
But unless his cholesterol is sky high and he has a familial dyslipidemia, I don't know why that was prescribed.
Triglycerides. But triglycerides are probably high.
Lipitor is lousy for triglycerides.
We know. But that could be the reason for the fatty liver. It's too many carbs and then too high triglycerides.
But actually, taking a certain fat is very good for lowering triglycerides,
Absolutely.
Which is omega-3 fish oil. In fact, it's the only indication medically, when you want a medical prescription for fish oil, it's the only thing that's the approved indication for it. For high triglycerides.
Yeah.
So these, what are the
is
products?
Is it still Lovaza that they?
Lovaza, yes, one of them. And there's another one now.
Okay.
But that's where you can get your fish oil paid for. There's a copay.
Right.
It's not.
The best way to lower triglycerides is to lower your carbohydrate intake.
Yep.
And don't drink any alcohol.
Yep.
Yeah.
Bite the bullet.
Okay, bite the bullet. All right, Bo, thank you. Best of luck to you. Oh, we've got an interesting question from Richard. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, on one of your recent podcasts, Dr. Hoffman noted in passing that L-carnitine can inhibit thyroid function. I was under the impression that L-carnitine would be helpful for energy metabolism and or weight loss.
Yeah, well, it is helpful. That's a good question, but it could actually do both. It doesn't inhibit thyroid function in a normal person, but it can be used to rein in hyperthyroidism. But
because of their catabolic state.
I'm not sure whether it really lowers the thyroid or whether it restores the energy in a person who's kind of running on it's almost like too many RPM in the motor.
Yeah.
You know, and that carnitine is necessary for restoration in patients with hyperthyroidism.
Right. And being hyperthyroid actually blows away a lot of the carnitine.
Yeah, that's what I would think.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Is it going to cause hypothyroidism in a normal person? I doubt it. I've not seen that, and I've prescribed a fair amount of carnitine in my day. And so the way that carnitine works is works as an energy shuttle to permit fat to enter the cells so that fat can be metabolized for energy.
Yeah.
And there are, most people have probably adequate carnitine, but there's some states where there's really low carnitine. So we often find that in patients with, debilitated ill patients. Patients with renal disease have low carnitine.
Yes.
And they benefit
maybe
from
vegan.
Carnitine.
People, because you don't get carnitine from your vegetables much.
Carnitine is synthesized from lysine. And so
an essential amino acid.
Yeah. Is a vegetarian diet low in lysine?
It can be.
Okay.
Unless you do your, bean and rice combining, because one is low in methionine and the other is low in lysine, and you put them together. But I imagine somebody who's vegan may not get adequate amounts of carnitine, and depending on their metabolic state.
Yeah.
as well.
Is there such a thing as a short question to end our podcast with?
A short question. Dan writes, "Hi, Layla and Dr. Hoffman. My doctor says that I suffer from iron deficiency anemia. I had a colonoscopy, came up negative. He wants me to go for a kidney sonogram. And why would he want a kidney sonogram? I don't eat any meat or poultry, but I do eat fish. I take a variety of supplements and an aspirin, but there was no internal bleeding."
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is that with an
aspirin,
you can sometimes have bleeding that you can't pinpoint the source. You can have sort of like very tiny.
Not necessarily GI.
It is GI, it's a sort of a slow ooze of blood from a site that's hard to identify with a scope. But you know, I don't know what's going on where it suggested that he have a renal ultrasound. Certain types of anemia are associated with kidney disease, but if it's pretty clear that this is an iron deficiency anemia, what I have learned recently is that some people have iron deficiency anemia due to malabsorption of iron.
Yeah.
Perhaps because they're taking an acid blocker.
Right.
Or some people who have what's called mast cell activation syndrome. We did a podcast recently with Dr. Tanya Dempsey.
Uh-huh.
A hallmark of that is sometimes inexplicable iron deficiency that doesn't correct when you take iron pills. And it's something about the metabolism of iron that gets blocked by this activation of your mast cells, which is sort of a hyper-allergic state in the body.
Wow.
This is a little bit, you know, getting in the weeds here in terms of esoteric causes for iron deficiency. But, you know, hopefully he's seeing a hematologist who can work this up properly.
Right, right. Wow. Dan doesn't eat any meat or poultry.
Oh, well, you know, you're asking for trouble there. I mean, if you have iron deficiency anemia, you should eat pragmatically.
Yes.
Because, you know, whether or not you want to protect nature, part of nature's plan is for you to survive.
Yes. And we're on the food chain, too.
Right, right. So
ask any lion or tiger.
Right.
or rhino.
The life you spare
may
not be your own.
Yes. On that note. Dan, thank you for your question.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't catch that part about the diet that's relatively meager in iron. But hey, you know, vegans can be fine in iron.
That's true.
You know, there are some people who are just very robust iron absorbers.
Yeah, right.
But if you're on the cusp with, you know, some issue that's preventing your absorption, you know, you're not doing yourself a solid by avoiding iron-rich food.
Right, right.
So, and, you know, just today. So, for example, just from daily practice, I saw a patient today who was tired a couple of years ago. And she came in for an annual visit, and she was real happy. And she brought in her blood test that her regular doctor had done. She was very low in iron. And so we identified that, and we just said, take some iron, just low-dose iron, and increase your iron in your diet. And I said, wow, you've been taking your iron pills. She said, no, I haven't. I haven't done that for the last 6 months. At first, she needed the iron pills to get her iron up.
Yeah.
But now, her ferritin is quite nice. Her iron is quite nice. She's no longer anemic. And she feels much more energy. You know, it's like, what was this mysterious cause of her low energy? Was it menopause? Was it? No. It was, her B12 was kind of low, too. We fixed that,
That's
too.
That's a feature. Okay.
So that could, you know, it was a nutritional cause of fatigue, a classic nutritional cause, very prevalent.
Yeah. And she's a very happy patient now.
Yep. You saw her too. Okay. That's all the time that we have on that note. That's all the time we have for today's Intelligent Medicine podcast. Thanks for joining us. And
thank you, everybody.
Have yourselves a great week. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman with Layla Mudin, our nutritionist.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.